Mikkel, on September 15th, you will make a presentation in Weimar, a lecture about the self-murder of the avant-garde. And this is based on a text that you published in 2014. The text was titled Self-Destruction of the Avant-garde. So it's quite a long time that you are thinking and researching on the topic of avant-garde. And this might be my first question. What is your personal intention? What interests you in thinking about avant-garde?
Well, thanks for the invitation to have this conversation. I mean, I'm an art historian by education, and I've worked on the topic of the avant-garde for many years now. I wrote my doctoral dissertation on the Situationist International. So I've been engaged in politicized contemporary art for some decades now. And I've always been interested in the avant-garde as a historical movement, but also kind of like the lingering presence of the avant-garde in contemporary art. I mean, for me, the avant-garde encapsulates kind of like the paradoxical character of modern art, insofar as modern art contains a kind of a promise of happiness, une promesse du bonheur, as Stendhal or Adorno would say. So art is, in a certain sense, a place, a laboratory, where it's possible to engage in critical analysis or come up with images of a different world. But of course, because art is part of modern capitalist society, it's precisely as art that it's possible to articulate this critique. And the avant-garde historically has been an attempt to tackle that contradiction. So somehow trying to work through this doubleness of modern art, the fact that art is a kind of free zone where one can experiment, that is, the artist can experiment and create images of a different world, but that these images tend not to have any kind of social efficiency. And the avant-garde was historically, in the interwar period, engaged in different kinds of experiments where this promise of art was in different ways realized. And I think, I mean, if art is to have any kind of relevance beyond just being kind of like challenging or interesting images, the avant-garde has to be kind of like, we have to engage with the tradition of the avant-garde somehow.
So we are talking about avant-garde, and maybe for the listeners, it's good to make clear what this term avant-garde means. So I think avant-garde is not only another term for modern art. How would you define avant-garde?
I would probably follow the German literary historian Peter Bürger in his 1974 kind of classic Theorie der Avant-garde, Theory of the Avant-garde. Bürger kind of like fairly in a fairly precise manner lays out the difference between a modern art in general, or modernism, and then the avant-garde, and says that the avant-garde, and for Bürger, the avant-garde would be like the Dada movement, French surrealism, parts of the Russian avant-garde movement. All of these different interwar groups were characterized by trying to subvert or attack the institutional status of art. So what they were trying to do was somehow giving art a purpose outside of the art institution, precisely in order to kind of like realize the promise of art in a transformed everyday life. So that would be kind of like the basic distinction between modern art and the avant-garde. But of course, following Bürger, one could argue that in a certain sense, modern art in general is characterized by this kind of like semi-revolutionary promise. I mean, as the British former situationist Marxist art historian T.J. Clark often says, I mean, there can be no modernism without the practical possibility of an end to capitalism existing. So this intimate relationship between modernism, the avant-garde, and then some kind of transgression of capitalism. But it's in the different avant-garde movements that this intimate relationship is most evident or most visible, I think.
So you are touching an important argument of your text, self-destruction of the avant-garde. This argument is to say the concept of avant-garde is very strongly connected with revolution. So as you say, avant-garde means not only a revolution of art, it means also a revolution of the everyday life and the revolution of the society as a whole. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about this. Why would you say it's so important to think avant-garde and revolution together?
Well, I mean, one way of answering would, of course, be to go back and reread some, I mean, texts, poems, manifestos by different avant-garde anti-artists. And there we can, I mean, from the Berlin Dadaist to Breton in Paris in the 20s to the Situationist International in the 50s and 60s. I mean, they themselves, of course, connect the practical experiments they were engaging in. They connect these experiments with a kind of revolutionary project of ending capitalist society. So it's in there in these texts, and I think that's one of the most important things to make clear when talking about the avant-garde, that if we want to have a it's not relevant to talk about the avant-garde unless we connect it to this revolutionary intention. I mean, if we don't do that, we can just talk about modern art in a more loose or kind of like open way. But the avant-garde is precisely this demand or this willingness to connect artistic or anti-artistic experiments with ongoing revolutionary struggles. And I think it's that's kind of like that would be my argument, that modern art in itself is somehow connected to the promise of a different kind of life activity than the one we have in what we could term bourgeois capitalist society. But it's in the different avant-garde movements that this hope or this project emerges most fully. And that's also why the avant-garde is characterized, or the different avant-garde movements are characterized by this paradoxical attempt to end art or somehow make art after the end of art. Because, I mean, if we look at the Surrealist, for instance, or if we look at the Situationist, we can see that they've come to the realization that they, as artists, are equipped with the freedom that most ordinary people do not have. So in order to somehow expand that freedom, they have to negate themselves as artists. And that's of course the kind of like the argument for this notion of self-destruction or self-murder of the avant-garde, that artists actually have to somehow escape the identity or the activity of artists in order to live up to the promise of freedom of modern art.
When we talk about avant-garde, we can say there's one original avant-garde, as you said, the avant-garde in the early 20th century, the avant-garde in the 1920s and 1930s. But on the other hand, there is an avant-garde movement in the post-war time in the 50s and 60s, and it's often called post-avant-garde. And another argument of your text is to say there is a strong meaning of the term avant-garde. And when we take this serious, we must say the post-avant-garde is not avant-garde in this strong meaning. Why would you say post-avant-garde is not really avant-garde?
Yes, that discussion is connected to Bürger's 1974 book, where Bürger argues that we have to differentiate between what he talks about as the historical avant-garde, which would be Dada, Surrealism, the Russian avant-garde movements, and then the different artistic practices that emerged after the Second World War in Western Europe and the US, so pop art, nouveau realism, minimal art, conceptual art, feminist art movements. And according to Bürger, And he labels these movements the neo avant-garde. And he looks upon these new avant-garde movements as a kind of reintroduction of some of the interwar avant-garde movement, some of their strategies or techniques, but within the institution of art. So his argument is that they somehow recuperate or integrate former transgressive gestures and somehow turns them into mere artistic means. And I would, to a large extent, agree with Bürger and say that most post-World War II artistic practices or movements, I mean, we can see it's fairly clear that few of them are characterized by the same kind of revolutionary commitment as we find in French, for instance, in French surrealism. There are some movements, perhaps most of all the Situationist movement, that are different. But pop art, minimal art, conceptual art, etc. I mean, even looking at groups like the Art Workers Coalition, this interest group that was created in New York in 1968 in opposition to the Vietnam War. I mean, even an organization such as Art Workers Coalition, they never really managed to kind of like politicize what they were doing. I mean, they ended up protesting at MoMA or at the Guggenheim, trying to somehow make explicit the connection between some of the board members of these museums and then firms engaged in creating weapons in Vietnam. And that's perfectly fine and super relevant. But most artists and art critics active in Art Workers Coalition, they were engaged as citizens or as individuals. So they continued to do, I mean, someone like Hans Hacke or Karl André, Lucy Lippert, they did not try to combine political engagement and artistic practice. So they continued doing the work they were doing on the one hand, and then on the other hand, they were engaged as citizens in a certain sense or as art workers. But the Situationist International, they were characterized by trying to integrate these two dimensions, so to say, or characterized by trying to transcend the separate activities or the different identities of de-differentiated modern society. So they didn't accept the role as artists. They didn't accept the role as activists, but sought somehow to transgress these different activities. But so there's this... this development in the 20th century where kind of like the more radical avant-gardist position tends to disappear is present within small groups like the Situationist International in the 50s and 60s. But if we look at the 20th century and art history in the 20th century, broadly speaking, the avant-garde tends to disappear. So the historical avant-garde is replaced by the new avant-garde, and the new avant-garde restages the historical avant-garde's radical project within the institution. And then afterwards, we of course get some kind of post-new avant-garde that then recirculates or paraphrases kind of like the new avant-garde's institutional gestures without any kind of reference to an art external audience. So in a certain sense, it's a history of the decline where the avant-garde position tends to disappear or where it's very difficult to uphold kind of like that the radical gesture of the avant-garde. And that's of course connected to a much larger historical development that has to do with, I mean, in a certain sense, the falling apart or the disappearance of a revolutionary vocabulary. So kind of like the disappearance or the breakdown of Marxism with a shorthand during the last decades of the 20th century.
So we said avant-garde and revolution are connected very strongly, and when we say this, we also have to say the project of avant-garde failed in a way. Maybe there was a revolution inside of the institution of art, but the revolution of the society, the revolution of the everyday life as the avant-garde intended, it didn't happen. And on the other hand, the avant-garde was not without any effect. There was an effect of avant-garde, and in your text you say, in a way, the avant-garde did make the job of capitalism. So capitalism and avant-garde are also connected together. Why would you say this?
I mean, in a way, that's the kind of like the nightmare of the avant-garde itself, that it's intent on, I mean, it's engaged in a battle against the capitalist mode of production, or it's engaged in a battle against the bourgeoisie. And it becomes more and more difficult to distinguish between the uneven and combined development of a capitalist mode of production, to use Trotsky's formulation, to distinguish between that kind of like the development or undevelopment of capitalist modernization, and then the destruction of the avant-garde. Both of these processes are characterized by a strong will to destroy the old world. And in I mean, for instance, in the Situationist project, this small anti-artistic avant-garde group that existed from 1957 to 1972, with founded by Guy Debord, Asger Jorn, and others, within the Situationist movement we find an analysis according to which it becomes more and more difficult to distinguish between kind of like what they term the spectacle, or the society of the spectacle, and the spectacle's ability to present seemingly transgressive gestures and then genuine revolutionary gestures. So the society of the spectacle is in a certain sense mimicking the avant-garde, and in the late 1960s we have this very interesting Italian architectural historian called Manfredo Tafuri, and Tafuri is in a certain sense kind of like the one who presents this analysis most clearly when he argues that the avant-garde movement is engaged in an attempt to create a new world, to realize kind of like the utopian promise of art, but that they somehow end up opening the door or paving the way for what he, following Mario Tronti and Antonio Negri, talks about as kind of like planner capitalism. So the post-World War II planner state, or what we perhaps today would talk about as the welfare state, that actually the avant-garde, in its attempt to attack the old order meaning kind of like the still existing feudal structures. I mean, think about Russia before the Russian Revolution, or Germany before World War I. So society is characterized by kings and aristocracy and societies that were still to a fairly large extent in the very first steps of modernization. The historical avant-garde movements ridiculed and attacked these societies. But according to someone like Tafuri, ended up collaborating behind their backs with the emerging powers of the bourgeoisie. So that in a certain sense has always been kind of like the dilemma, or the doubt, or the fear of the avant-garde, that the destruction the avant-garde is trying to unleash might end up paving the way for a world that is characterized by new forms of domination, where art might be integrated into everyday life, but integrated into an everyday life that is quite unlike the kind of like the communist existence the different avant-garde groups envisage in different ways.
So when we say the avant-garde failed and the revolution the avant-garde intended did not happen, we can ask for the reason. And we can say, on the one hand, the counter-revolution just conquered over the avant-garde, or as you said, the spectacle captured the gestures of the avant-garde. But the title of your text is Self-Destruction of the Avant-Garde, and the title of your presentation in Weimar is Self-Murder of the Avant-Garde. So it seems that the avant-garde itself had a part on its own failure. So what does this mean? Why self-destruction? By self-murder.
Yeah, I mean that's it's also, I mean, the having worked on the avant-garde, worked kind of like done research into the Situationist International and been active in different kinds of groups or struggles, these considerations are also a kind of internal evaluation of the avant-garde project, or kind of like doing research on the avant-garde position. So, I mean, I end up in a contradictory situation, but I'm trying to argue that the avant-garde, it's pivotal to keep the avant-garde gesture alive. And that's the most important thing. But then I'm of course also pointing to some of the inherent limits and problems within the avant-garde position, and in order to enable a kind of renaissance of the avant-garde, it's important to kind of like also revisit some of the blind spots or the problems of the avant-garde position. And that's of course also related to some of the inherent problems of kind of like the revolutionary position, or kind of like the analysis of Western Marxism, which the avant-garde was closely allied to. And I think that, of course, one of the dimensions or one of the kind of like the understandings of the title is, of course, also that the avant-garde ended up, especially the Situationist in the late 60s, ended up in a situation where they actually, I mean, they did self-destruct. They did themselves closed down the organization in 1972, Guy Debord and Jean-Franco Sanguinetti. So we can kind of like talk about a self-murder of the avant-garde, where they ended up kind of like abandoning the project or trying to think through what it would mean to engage in a kind of post-avant-gardist struggle without a kind of formalized institutional framework. And I think that's still an important question. I mean, it's very difficult to see what kind of political artistic models or forms we can use in the present conjuncture. Forms that, I mean, most political organizational forms, I think I would argue have become obsolete. So it's the analysis of the form of the avant-garde is of course connected to an analysis of the form of the political party, for instance, or the union form, or all of these different political forms of the 19th and 20th century that was developed by the revolutionary and the reformist left-wing working class movement. But most of them, I think, are without any kind of progressive potential in the present situation, or that's at least part of the discussion I would like to engage in or raise. What's left of all of these political forms? Can we somehow rewrite them, or is it better to ditch them somehow?
So this would also be my last question: what is left, and what can we keep of the concept of the avant-garde? And yeah, so we talk about avant-garde as a project that failed in a way, a project that became a part of capitalism, and maybe we have a kind of self-destruction to keep the possibility of the position that these groups made. And they don't want it to become a conserved organization, an alienated organization, and this is the reason why they destroy their own organization, maybe in this way. So what do you think, what's left, what would you keep from the concept of avant-garde?
I think I mean I would keep the notion of refusal. I mean, going back to someone like, I mean, I talked about the situation is international, but someone like Herbert Marcuse in the 60s, his notion of the great refusal is important. So I think one of the most important aspects of the avant-garde is, of course, the attempt to engage in radical critique. I mean, of course, we can find exceptions, but I mean, in general, if we look at, for instance, I mean, talking about Herbert Marcuse, if we look at kind of like the tradition of critical theory, for instance, although I think there's important insights in the works of, I don't know, Habermas or Axel Honneth or Menke or people like that, it's fairly evident that all of the later traditions of critical theory, they have abandoned any wish or hope for a radical transformation of late capitalist society. And the avant-garde is first and foremost characterized by this revolutionary intentionality or the wish to radically transform the world. And I think that, I mean, that's I want to keep a hold on that, all the while, of course, knowing that the avant-garde tradition perhaps ended up opening the door for different kinds of problematic political engagement, or paving the way for what the situationist termed the society of the spectacle. But what we are sorely missing today, I would argue, is basically the notion of revolution. And I think that, I mean, the notion of revolution was kind of like central in the avant-garde project. So one way of reformulating the idea of a revolutionary break with late capitalist society would be going back to the avant-garde, because the avant-garde was not merely a philosophical theoretical proposal, was actually an experiment in living differently. So the notion of the critique of everyday life, for instance, we find in Surrealism and the Situationist, was an attempt to create a kind of revolutionary imaginary, in a certain sense, a revolutionary imaginary that could mobilize people to end the kind of 50-year-long passivity we've been living through the last 5-6 decades. So that would be one answer to that question.